Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How is war different for the soldiers fighting it than for the civilians who support the troops from the safety of thousands of miles away? In Ben Fountain's new novel, a 19-year-old soldier named Billy Lynn and his unit spend a surreal Thanksgiving Day at a Dallas Cowboys game, feted as American heroes for an act in the Iraq War caught on TV by an embedded Fox News crew. Plucked from the battlefield to complete a two-week victory tour, Billy and his friends are treated to elaborate meals put up in the W Hotel and repeatedly thanked for their service by Americans, even as they come to terms with one comrade's maiming, another's death, and the specter of returning to the fight as soon as their PR value begins to fade. Ben Fountain is here now to talk about the book, which is called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Ben, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much, Chris.
You may have written the world's first war novel that takes place entirely in a pro football stadium, but it's actually a brilliant way to remind us that if we're not really careful, those of us who observe events from far away can start to look at this as a form of, I hate to say it, entertainment.
Well, I think that's a tremendous danger for a society. Obviously, it's a tremendous danger for the young people who have to go fight those wars. But I think it's also a tremendous moral danger for the society as a whole. I think what it boils down to is if we regard war as anything less than, the very deadly business that it is, then we risk losing touch with the ultimate reality. And any society that becomes unmoored from reality or grasp on reality, I think, is running tremendous risks in all kinds of ways that will ultimately threaten its survival.
And Billy comes away from every one of these encounters he has with people who mean well, but who feel great. They feel great about themselves for supporting the troops. And I'm using air quotes there. And in each time, he is more aware of how hollow that ultimately is.
Yeah. And yet Billy doesn't begrudge them. I mean, And one thing I wanted to get across in the book is that when people are thanking him, when they're expressing their appreciation, they really mean it. They really mean it to a point. Do they mean it so much that they would be willing to sacrifice anything of theirs or anyone of their beloveds? Talk is cheap, money screams, and then it's kids like Billy who end up going off to fight the war.
You have a line near the end of the book where you say, what they don't know is more powerful than all the things he knows. That's such an amazing statement. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Well, Billy knows what he knows. He's a combat veteran at the age of 19. He's experienced that ultimate reality of stark life and death, and he's had one of his best buddies die in his arms. He knows what reality is, what the reality of the war is. So many of us on the home front, stateside, we only think we know what it is, and certainly the powers that be who sent kids like Billy off to war. There was so much that they didn't know. Maybe they could have known, maybe they should have known, but they weren't in touch with the full reality of the situation. Billy knows what he knows. What he knows is the truth. And yet he has no power, no control over his own faith, over his own fate. So in a way, what the ruling powers here in the United States, what society as a whole wants or thinks it wants, is more powerful than the truth Billy has.
Yeah, he's still coming to terms with all of these things that he has experienced that will probably be on his mind to a certain extent every day of the rest of his life. And yet he has lost complete control. The story no longer belongs to him or to his friends.
Right. It's a point I wanted to make in the book, and that is, it's a soldier's job to do as they're told, And they, I think soldiers become very sensitive and acutely aware of gradations of power, control, coercion, duress. And they know they aren't masters of their own fate. They're acutely aware of that. And there's this kind of graveyard camaraderie and joking around that goes on with that kind of knowledge.
I really like the character of Sergeant Dime, who is really just old enough to be the older brother of these guys that he's in charge of, and yet they look to him for everything, for discipline, for guidance, for reassurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, one thing I've always been amazed at in all wars, in all accounts of battle, is how young so many of the people who are in positions of responsibility are. You know, watching, you know, any kind of documentary on D-Day, say, for example, or Vietnam, it's the 22 and 23 and 24-year-olds who are commanding, you know, platoons and companies. And if you stop and think about it, I mean, they aren't much more than kids, and yet they shoulder this huge responsibility.
It's an interesting foil, though, because you also include in this book a character called Major Mac, who is essentially a ghost. He's there, but he's not there.
Right. Major Mac is, he was blown up not once, but twice his first day in theater of war. And he has acute hearing loss. And the Army has parked him in public affairs while they figure out what to do with him. And he is suffering from some sort of acute trauma, and the Army just hasn't gotten around to figuring out, okay, what are we going to do with this guy? And so he's assigned to escort Bravo around. And Major Mac is checked out. I mean, and he literally drifts in and out of the action. He will go missing for 30 minutes, and Dom will send Billy and maybe one of his comrades out to, you know, go find Major Mac. And Major Mac, you know, sooner or later turns up on his own.
Something really poignant about Billy. You know, he's 19, and there are times when you, with a very light touch, remind us of how young he is. Like when he goes home and he's lying out in the sun because it's good for his acne. We're suddenly slapped in the face with the fact that this is an adolescent boy. But he's never had sex. But what he really wants more than that is a girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Billy has grown up a lot. I mean, he thinks he's old. He feels old. And at one point, he's wondering at himself for wanting a girlfriend just as much or more than he wants just physical sex. And he's thinking, what's happened to me? Is it because I've been at the war and maybe I have a different appreciation of life? Or is it just that I'm going to be 20 years old soon, and I'm so much older and wiser, which in itself is a form of, you know, youthful naivete.
Billy seems to feel all of this more deeply than his comrades. And I don't know, in your mind, is he fundamentally different than they are? Or if you were to take yourself inside the minds of any one of these characters, could you have told a similar story?
Well, I don't think there's any such thing as a simple human being. I think there are layers and complexities in all of us, and some people are just more tuned in to those levels, and I think Billy is tuned in, but I think pretty much anybody in the squad, if they sat down and thought about it or had some coaching about, okay, well, you were feeling this, you know, try to articulate this. What exactly was that experience like? You know, sooner or later, these levels and complexities would come out.
And I think that makes it more painful for us as the American public, because it's really easy to think, well, they're just kids and they like the idea of the fight and they want to go out there. But in fact, there is an emotional remnant for everyone who goes off to war.
Well, you know, this is one way of looking at it, and I'm sure it's too extreme, but over and over I've seen this in the course of my life, not just exploring this war, but in reading and hearing people talk about other wars, and that is people join the military, they do what they do, And then often they spend the rest of their lives getting over it.
My guest is author Ben Fountain. His new novel is called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. He will be speaking to the Dallas Museum of Arts, Arts and Letters Live on May 18th. We'll come back to our conversation with Ben in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join us, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. You know at this point that what we're taking a break for is to remind you of the importance of your support for KERA to bring you conversations like this one with Ben Fountain. You can do your part by going online now to kera.org, clicking on that support button, which we display very prominently at these times. You can also call in to 1-888-694-6931. And if you make a contribution today at or above the $120 level, we can thank you with a copy of Ben Fountain's novel, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Jeff Whittington is with us now. He is the senior producer of this show and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a great conversation. Really excited to have Ben here in studio today. And I think he's beginning his book tour like right after the show. So we're really, really lucky we got him today. If you're enjoying this conversation, I know you would enjoy this book. And I know that you enjoy KERA. That's why it's worth your call right now, a couple of minutes on the phone at 888-694-6931, a couple of dollars a month. And you'll know that you're doing your part to support your public radio station. Plus, Chris, we've done really pretty well the last couple of days. Things are starting to pick up. People are starting to realize we could end this drive this week. People are starting to believe it. Our goal this hour to stay on track. We've got about $3,035 left to raise by 1 p.m. to keep the drive on track to hopefully, we still believe that we can finish the drive this week.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can make your gift of support online at kera.org. Supporting public radio is the sort of thing you might say to yourself, well, I don't have to do it. Well, nobody has to do it, but we wouldn't be here if people didn't. And there is a time in, I think, everyone's life when you realize that things that you believe in, things that you think are important, they are your responsibility to take care of and to shepherd. And we so appreciate those of you who add KERA to your list of charitable contributions. The reality is that if you listen to the station, we ask you to make a contribution in some amount. You know, some people just do a few dollars for the whole year. Some people do $10 or $20 or $30 a month. Some people are members at the Friends level of $1,500 a year. Whatever amount of contribution you can make, it keeps the station strong and allows us to provide you with this kind of programming.
Yeah, and the truth is that we know about how many of you are listening right now. And we know about how many contributions we still need to finish this drive. And when you compare those numbers, if about half of you would call right now, 888-694-6931, or if half of you would go online right now to kera.org, we could end the drive at this moment. So, you know, look somebody in the eye. Just pick somebody randomly who is within your proximity and, you know, make a decision. Is it going to be you or is it going to be me? And maybe you'll both decide to support the station, and we'll get it done even that much faster.
Positive peer pressure would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yes.
So many of you, you know, make KERA a part of your day on a regular basis. We know that a lot of you have a lunchtime date with this show and with anything you ever wanted to know. Local programming comes with a cost because, you know, Jeff and I have to earn a living here. We also have materials that we have to bring in-house, and we have things to print out and the whole nine yards. And we also have all of the national programming that you count on every day, and a team of crack award-winning local journalists providing you with news. Your support makes all of this possible at 1-888-694-6931.
Go online to kera.org, make your contribution. It just takes a couple of minutes, and remember, if you contribute $10 a month or $120 all at once, we will thank you with your very own copy of Ben Fountain's new novel, this highly anticipated novel, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, with our thanks. And of course, you'll be doing your part to support the station that you love and that you count on. 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. We're speaking this hour with novelist Ben Fountain. His new book, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, is out now. Ben Fountain will be speaking to the Dallas Museum of Art's Arts and Letters Live on May 18th. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Ben, one of the refrains we heard, particularly from the early days of the Iraq War, was that we were sending our troops into harm's way without adequate equipment to keep them protected. And there is a scene where, as part of his tour of the old Cowboys Stadium, Texas Stadium, Billy sees the equipment room for the team. Can you talk about what he finds there?
He finds extraordinarily organized and specialized equipment. He finds tons and tons of it, and he's a bit in awe of the sheer amount of material that goes into supporting a football team. And by the time he's done with his tour of the equipment room, he's in a daze. And part of it has to do with the leather and plastic smells that have made him a little bit high. but he's not sure what he's seen. I think what he's registering is the sheer industrial manufacturing might of the United States, which in this case happens to be devoted entirely to a sport.
Yeah, the overabundance is nauseating, literally. And you just realize that at some point this is what we value.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, we see the players on the field. And we see them running their plays, and it looks pretty simple. But then if you take a look at what's on the sidelines and the sheer tonnage of equipment and how specialized particular pieces of equipment are, and it seems like there's more every year. I mean, you used to never see coaches with headsets on, but now all the coaches have headsets, and there's four or five coaches up in the box, communicating with the coach on the field who's communicating with the quarterback, via the headphones in the quarterback's helmet. It's there is an extraordinary infrastructure to football.
And ultimately, and I have nothing against professional sports, but it's for something that doesn't really matter. It's not a life and death situation.
Well, it's a business, mm-hmm. It's an entertainment business. But I think often we do equate it with life and death, or the stakes seem that high at times.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Ray in Plano. Hi, Ray.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I'm really glad that I tuned in this afternoon and I listened in to somebody that actually had written on something that I was very familiar with, because I've actually been in that situation, haven't been a veteran myself, and really need to see somebody actually express on paper that side of the story, which nobody really gets to see, and it is awkward and rewarding at the same time. So I'm really glad that you guys shared this on the air, because it's definitely a publication that I'm looking forward to having in my hands. So
thank you so much for your call, Ray. I really appreciate it. Do you can you talk a little bit about your research and how the story came together for you, and then how you got the details right?
The impulse for the story came from an actual Cowboys halftime show during a Thanksgiving game. It was in the mid 2000s, 2000-aughts, and it was shortly after Bush was elected in 2004. Not reelected, but elected. And I was sitting there on the sofa. We had a bunch of people over to our house for Thanksgiving dinner, and the game was on sort of as background. And halftime comes on, and everybody else sort of drifts out of the den, and I'm sitting there in the den in front of the TV, and I have to confess I'd had a couple of martinis by that point, so I was feeling pretty immobile. But the halftime show comes on, and it caught my eye, and I actually started watching it. And it's much the way I portray it in the book. It came across to me as this extremely, I mean, not just over the top, but surreal mashup of American triumphalism, militarism, and pop culture and softcore porn. And it was like...
That is a mashup.
Yeah, it is. And everybody was okay with it. The people in the stands and the announcers, the TV announcers in the booth, everybody was well, you know, this is just grand. But to me, it seemed slightly insane.
In the story, Billy and his friends, they know that Destiny's Child is going to be performing, and you know they're 19, 20, 21 year old kids. They really want to meet Beyonce. Instead, what they find is that they are used almost as human props for something that is much bigger than them. It's supposed to be in celebration of their contributions, but that's not what it turns out to be.
Right. I mean, they are the entire day at the stadium. They are subject to various agendas, and people want a piece of Bravo. I mean, Bravo at this point in time seems to have a little bit of magic about them, although that magic is fading. They've been around for 2 weeks. But as these things go, when somebody's got some mojo going, some celebrity, other people want a piece of it, and they want to see what they can get off of it. And so Bravo is very much being pushed and pulled according to whoever has control of them at that particular moment in time.
Along with the team throughout their 2 weeks, and certainly on this one day that the novel unfolds in, is this film producer, Albert. And he seems like a decent enough human being. Like, he's not really out to get them, but he also realizes that their value to him is limited.
Right. Well, I mean, I didn't want Albert to be your stereotypical user Hollywood producer. I mean, for one thing, it wouldn't be very interesting to write a character like that. And Albert has genuine affection for these guys, and he has a genuine appreciation for what they've done. And he freely admits to them that he did everything he could to avoid military service in Vietnam. That's when he was a young man. And he feels genuine affection for the soldiers. He also does what he does. He's a Hollywood movie producer, and he's trying to get the deal done. And he's you know, working the phones as hard as he can, but he wants a good deal for Bravo, too. So he's a mixed bag.
There's this really funny arc where somebody is saying, well, maybe Hilary Swank should play not one but two of these characters. And I just wonder how you, in your mind, you know, there are serious moments, there's a lot of humor in the novel, but how you decided that was sort of the right touch.
Well, I mean, in my very small experience with Hollywood, the key is getting someone big attached.
Doesn't matter who it is.
Right, right. It's there are 30 or 40 people in Hollywood at any one particular time. If you can get them attached to your project, then everybody else is willing to commit. And these 30 or 40 people, their names get tossed around a lot. And I just wanted to tap into to all the BS that goes on, you know, surrounding these imminent deals, these deals trying to happen. And it seemed like as good a way of any, you know, to gin up the absurdity, which, by the way, is rock solid reality as well. Well, you know, Hilary Swank is interested, and she can play a guy, or she can play it as a girl. So, you know, whatever Hilary wants, we'll do.
Did you know from the beginning that you would not fully articulate exactly what happened to Bravo Squad, or was that something you sort of tried in different ways and then decided to go the way you did?
Yeah, when I started, I had no idea where it was going to go. And, I mean, various scenarios were bouncing around in my head. I mean, one was they would get in the limo after the game and take off for Mexico, which didn't ring true to me. But there were various scenarios. I even thought about following them back to Iraq. And ultimately, with so much in this kind of work, you go by improvisation and instinct and gut and hope you're doing it the right way.
But I'm talking even about the fact that we don't learn as readers precisely what took place on the day that made Bravo Squad heroes.
Right, right. I mean, you get pretty sharp moments of it, but I didn't want you, I didn't feel the need, I didn't feel like it was necessary to lay out step by step what happened on that day. I just wanted to give you the essence of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because it sort of flashes is the wrong word, but it almost puffs back at Billy at certain points in the way that memories do, where you remember just a fragment here and there.
Right, and I think if we tap into our own memories of very intense, you know, maybe violent experiences, often that's the way the memories, you know, come to us in bits and pieces, fragments, in blurs with moments of very sharp clarity. So I'm trying to stay true to that aspect of the experience as well.
So there are some very thinly veiled portraits of some very famous Dallasites in this book. They are obviously completely fictionalized to the extent that the events that they take part in as regards Billy and Bravo Squad didn't occur. But why not use the real names of people and say this is a fictionalized account?
Because I want freedom. I don't want to be tied down to the particulars of any one individual, one specific individual. And I don't know, it just felt right. I can't really articulate a presentable reason other than it just felt better to me not to use real names, to use made up people.
My guest is novelist Ben Fountain. His new book is called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. He'll be speaking to the Dallas Museum of Arts, Arts and Letters Live on May 18th. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. If you would like to support KERA, make sure that we bring you many more conversations like this one in the future, and also to receive a copy of Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk by Ben Fountain. You can do that by getting in touch with us now and making a contribution at or above $120. Go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back now, senior producer of the show. And do you have an update on how we're doing?
I do, Chris.
Excellent.
Our goal of this for this hour, I think it was $3,500 when we started. Mm-hmm. Just $2,600 left to go. That's just 26 people making a $100 contribution. And if you go to 120, we'll send you a copy of Ben's book, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, as a thank you gift. Of course, the book is out. It's available at your favorite, you know, retailer right now. You can get it. And we would encourage you to do that and support the station either by making a $120 contribution or reading the book but still supporting the station, because this is your public radio station. There are many others like it all over the country, but this one is yours. And KERA relies on you to give some money to the station once a year. Really, it'd be great if you'd give to the station three times a year, but we'll save that for the next couple of membership campaigns. But this one, we're just going to focus on getting you to give one time a year. But, you know, if you did make a contribution earlier this year in the winter drive, we would be happy to take an additional gift from you today, because, when you realize how important public radio is to your life and how important these kinds of conversations are, and the fact that you don't hear this kind of discussion anywhere else, not in this market. That's what we're asking you to support.
It's really a luxury on this show to have an hour to speak to each topic that we cover on the show. That is something that, as I'm sure you've looked around and noticed, in broadcasting today is very unusual, because commercial advertisers want something that moves quickly, so that if you're not interested in this, they can quickly move you on to another topic, and therefore you'll stick around for the commercial. There's nothing wrong with doing things that way. You know, it's a business. We're a business. You know, they have to make money somehow. We just feel like we can provide the sort of deep coverage of things that you prefer if we come to you directly and ask you to fund us. And in fact, you do. Listeners just like you and me spend more than half the money it takes to keep the station on the air.
And trust me, it's not like Chris Boyd doesn't have opinions on politics and current events and things where she could talk like it's the Chris Boyd Show.
I can't imagine if I had to switch over to that, though. It would be terrible.
And then, you know, do like a 3-minute interview. We'll do a 3-minute, but then we're going to get back to what I think.
You shut up.
Exactly. Then we'll get back to what I think is really important. All right. You know, there's plenty of that out there. And it's not like we couldn't do that because, you know, we could. But this is a place that, as I've been saying during this drive, at the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the month, certainly at the end of the membership campaign, hopefully the world's a little bit better place. And that's because when we talk to each other, we find out what's going on behind the eyes and behind the faces of people that we have a tendency to just see as maybe just a two-dimensional aspect to the world, that the movie of our lives. You know, but really, if you sit and talk and you listen and you interact, you learn something about other people, and hopefully that makes the world a better place. So that's what we're asking you to call, 888-694-6931. Support the incredible power of conversation online at kera.org. I
want to say thank you to Mary Caruncia of Dallas, Jeffrey Kutak of Fort Worth, James Sharp of Irving, Robert Emery in Dallas. Thank you very much for your support. Jeffrey is in Rockwall. Sorry, Jeffrey. Also, Mary Stadelman in Dallas. And we have $720 left to raise in this hour, which we definitely can do. We received a friends level contribution. Thank you so much for that. And thanks to all of you, because whether you are a friend of the station or you give at a lower amount, your dollars go directly to work for the programming that you value.
Yeah, the Friends of KERA are folks who give at least $1,500 a year. And when you do that, not only do you provide a really huge level of support for the station, but we also have every once in a while people come through, personalities, PBS and NPR personalities come through. Diane Rehm was here last week, and the Friends of KERA, I had a chance to hear her talk with the Chris Boyd, who's right here in front of me, over at the Crescent. And, you know, they got the chance to meet Diane, a little cocktail reception. So you'll get invited to things like that when you join the Friends level. You also get the opportunity to elect to receive 7,500 American Airlines Advantage miles with our thanks. So it's a great way to support the station. And if you become a sustaining friend of the station, it's just $125 a month. On your credit card or out of your account. So if you choose to do that, you can find out more details about it at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
Or become a sustainer at just $10 a month and receive a copy of Ben Fountain's new novel, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. It has been really positively reviewed. It's being talked about everywhere. He's about to launch on a nationwide media tour. You have a chance to hear about the book today. Call us now and express your support for this station at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in financial planning, web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is novelist Ben Fountain. He's actually from Dallas, and his new book is called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Ben, Billy, the novel is written in the third person, but we get the sense that we are hearing Billy's thoughts, except expressed in third person. But he seems to have a remarkable vocabulary for a kid who essentially had to enter the army because he was about to go to jail.
Right. It's something I wrestled with in the writing of the book, and that is how articulate to make Billy's thought stream, And I think that's a challenge for any writer who's writing about characters who aren't, you know, from particularly well-educated. I mean, Henry James had it easy. All of his characters were well-educated and extremely articulate. But if you're dealing with somebody like Billy, a 19-year-old who's finished high school but has no college, what do you do? And as I said a few minutes ago, I don't think there's any such thing as a simple person. I think we're all complex people. Some of us are more articulate than others. Some have more awareness of what's going on in that interior monologue that happens in their heads that we all have going on. So the approach I took was, if Billy could sit down and articulate what he's feeling and thinking, this is what it would be. It's okay for me as the writer, for the narrative voice, to articulate it as clearly as I can. And these are all things that Billy is experiencing on one level or another. And I could have gone the other route and just kept it at you know, a very visceral level and a pretty blunt level. But I thought, well, I'm willing to, if I'm going to err on one side or the other, I want to err on the side that gives me more freedom to do what I want to do. And if there's a bit of a problem with verisimilitude, you know, believability, well, that's a risk I'm willing to take.
See, for me, what I really took from it was it's almost a commentary on the fact that we assume that no education means not much intelligence. And that's not always the case. There are a million reasons why people don't have access to education, why life takes different turns. We learn a bit about his family and we can understand why he's had a hard time.
Right. Well, I believe genius is as common as dirt. And I've spent quite a bit of time in Haiti. And in the course of my travels there, I've encountered a lot of people with very little or no education who happen to be some of the smartest people I've ever met, some of the most perceptive, articulate, subtle thinkers I've ever come across. So absolutely, you don't have to have a lot of education to be an aware, thinking, articulate person.
You bring up genius. This is something that, of course, Malcolm Gladwell has written a great deal about, and he featured you in a very famous piece in 2006. Was that right?
It was 2008, I think.
2008, okay. And it was sort of announcing you to the world. You had published this collection of short stories, and there was a new novel on the way. It, in fact, was not this novel.
Right. Yeah. This article, I know when the article came out because it came out in October of 2008. And about 6 weeks later, my editor told me that they weren't going to publish the novel I'd been working on for more years than I care to admit. And in a perverse way, it was really pretty hilarious to have Malcolm Gladwell say, well, you seem to be some kind of genius. And then 6 weeks later, your editor says, actually, you aren't.
You know, it's interesting, too, because it's that common story that you're only as good as everybody thinks you are. You know, like you have to have a sense of your own ability, but you can have that snatched away simply because someone else decided that you're not as good as they thought you were.
Well, but I think in the end, reality is stronger than any of us. Mm-hmm. And in my case, it boiled down to, was the novel good enough, that novel that my editor rejected? And ultimately the answer is no, it wasn't good enough. And the decision came down to that, pure and simple.
So what does it take to get up the next morning and say, okay, this goes in a drawer of the gray metal filing cabinet and I start something else?
Well, you know, how many stages of grief are there? Five, mm-hmm. six, a dozen, two dozen, three dozen? I think I was on the, you know, like three dozen end of that scale. But pretty quickly, I thought, well, actually, I'm lucky. I still get to write. It's not like anyone has withdrawn permission to write. And you know, there's plenty more stories I want to tell. I know I can do better than this novel that was just rejected. I knew from a pretty early point that there were some serious flaws with it. But I thought, well, I still get to write, so I'll write. And I was up and working within a couple of days. So,
what does writing feel like for you?
The first 3 or 4 years, it was really painful because everything I wrote was terrible.
Objectively terrible, or you thought it was terrible?
Well, both. Both. I started publishing stories. I'd been writing about a year when I sold a couple of stories. But the work really displeased me in a lot of ways. As time has gone on and I've learned a few things, it's much more pleasurable now. And it's still like, you know, pulling your hair out one piece at a time. But there's also tremendous pleasure in it. And I really look forward, you know, to those weekday mornings when I have my little bit of breakfast, and then I go out to the office and I sit down. And I'm really happy doing that.
There are a few very brief scenes of Billy visiting his family back home. And there's one really nice segment where he talks about his nephew. And he doesn't think he's interested in preschoolers. He sort of likes the kid from a distance. But then he takes this extraordinary sensory joy in this. I don't know if he's two or three, this little boy. And first of all, that felt like something that could only have been written by a father. But I wonder what you were thinking that you needed us to know about Billy in showing us how much he was just astonished by the beauty of this child.
Well, Billy has seen death up close, and maybe that has something to do with it. But it's also just, the pure genius that you do see in 2 and 3 year olds, how they're absorbing everything and they're into everything, and everything that comes to hand, they want to find a way to manipulate it or explore it, and it's like these everyday miracles that happen all the time, and maybe also the fact that it's a blood relative. This is Billy's nephew, and maybe that has something to do with it as well.
Do you know what happens to Billy?
I'm
not going to ask you to tell me. I just want to know if you had to decide for yourself or if you had to.
Well, I'm dropping, there's certain things going on in the book, especially the last third of the book. Billy is going back to a place of great danger.
And he's afraid.
As any intelligent human being would be. They're all afraid. But he is going to run a lot of risks going back, and they have a long way to go. They have almost a year to go still left on their tour because they've been stop lost. I don't know what happens to Billy, but he's going back to a very dangerous situation.
Ben Fountain's new novel is called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Ben, it's been really a pleasure. I so appreciate you being here today.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Ben Fountain will also be speaking at the Dallas Museum of Art's Arts and Letters Live event that takes place on May 18th. You can find information about that online. If you would like to receive a copy of this new novel, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, we do have it available today as a thank you gift when you make a contribution of $120 or more. You can also go online to do this at kera.org, or you can call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I want to thank Eve and Yoshi Kobayashi in Arlington, Linda and Ignacio Nunez in Arlington, and James Gorman in Argyle. So we've got some contributions from the cities that begin with A. We need to hear from Alan as well. Just to make sure we get, and there's probably a couple more in the area, but we want to hear from you. The number to call, 888-694-6931. Go online to kera.org. Make your contribution. Chris, great news. We did make the goal for the hour.
Fantastic. Thanks to all of you who made that possible. But now we have a new goal.
Right. Well, the goal was $3,500 for each hour today, mm-hmm. for the Think Show today. So we need to get started on that next hour right now with your contribution at kera.org. or on the phone at 888-694-6931. What pushed us over was another contribution at the Friends level. So
fantastic.
If you've been considering that, this would be an ideal time. It's, it's Wednesday. We're, what is this, the eighth day of the membership campaign. I still believe that, we could nail this thing this week, and we certainly can if you make your call right now, because if you and you and you did your part, then we'd be done.
We know that most of you do not call to get the thank you gift because you'd be overpaying if you were actually buying something. But if you would like to read this book, I have to tell you, Jeff and I talk about this a lot. We don't do a lot of novels on the show. I am always excited when there's one that I really feel like I connect with. And this is a remarkable book. I think people are already talking about it. I think it's going to be something that continues to really have an impact on conversations about the war. Whether you agree with what's in it or you disagree, it's a really interesting piece of work. Just personally speaking, I'm stepping outside of my journalist hat. I think it's worth your time to read it.
Well, and it was also for me just really cool to have Ben Fountain here, because Ben We were joking on the way up to the studio. I was like, man, you're an overnight success. And he said,
after 25 years.
I'm a first novelist. My first novel is finally published at 54. And I said, Ben's really active in the local literary scene. Mm-hmm. He works with a lot of different organizations. He's involved at WordSpace and, different groups that we share, we share this realm with, sort of the lifelong education fans, the folks who really want to be involved in neat, artistic, and engaging and intelligent endeavors. And when you tune into KERA, that's what you're doing. You're getting involved in something that is, takes the time and make sure that the conversation is at an elevated level. And we have the time to do it. Honestly, other broadcasters are facing different pressures. Our pressure is to please you. These drives and we try to get you to give us some money as well.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can make your contribution online at kera.org. Choose to receive a thank you gift copy of Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, a novel by Ben Fountain. Jeff, it was our Jerome Weeks in the Art and Seek unit that first said to us, you really have to have Ben on the show. You have to read the book. And I'm so glad he did. KERA's Art and Seek project, of course, is something that you can access anytime through the website, which is a great resource for people who love the arts and want to keep up with what's going on in the community. There are some reports on this radio station provided by the Art and Seek team. And that is another service that we're able to bring to you because of your contributions, because you believe it's important that we cover not just local news, but also things like the arts and things like health and things that really matter to the community.
The number to call, 888-694-6931. Public radio really does matter to the community. It matters to you, and it matters to your friends and family, your neighbors. It matters to people you haven't even met who cannot afford to support the station at this time. So do your part right now to ensure that this station, this resource, this place that where we can bring you nearly an hour-long conversation with a novelist who lives and works here in North Texas but is about to make a huge splash nationally and probably beyond, where we can have that conversation with Ben Fountain because, it means something to you. Go online to kera.org. You can click and join there as well. It's very easy to make your contribution. And again, we're working on a $3,500 goal by 2 p.m. We really would love to hear from you. So we can really sew up both of these goals for the Think Show today.
You can do your part at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who have helped to make this pledge drive as short as possible. We are doing our part, but honestly, it really is up to you. It's up to you making your call, and I suppose that you is plural, but I want to speak to you as an individual, because if you have not yet participated, making a contribution right now in any amount you want, you're off the hook. You're done for a year if you want to be.
Yeah, and you'll know we're not talking to you anymore. We're talking to the other person, it's you.
Your brother-in-law.
Yeah. if you have not contributed this drive or this year or ever, then you're the one we're talking to. I'm really curious about what it is that's holding you back. And, I understand that there have been some challenges for people out there economically, and we totally understand that. And you know what? That's why this is radio for everyone, whether they can make a contribution or not, or whether they can make a large contribution or a small contribution. Any contribution is welcome. But I would love to know why you personally are not giving to the station. And you can email me. My email address is jwhittington@kera.org. It's jwhittington@kera.org. And tell me, and maybe there's something I can do about it. Maybe I can help fix the issue or explain something to you. But I would love to be able to talk to you about it because I think it's worth your support. I really do think that the station and this programming is worth your support.
This is just a guess, Jeff, but I think it might be, for some of you, I think it might be inertia. You never have made a contribution before, and so you assume things go along fine without you, and you assume we're sort of talking to other people out there. In fact, we're talking to you, the person who listens all the time, the person mm-hmm. who spends multiple lunch hours a week listening to this show and maybe listening to anything you ever wanted to know, the person who never misses car talk, who has to drive home during the hours that, all things considered, it is on. It's you.
Yeah, or maybe you feel like we've never asked you personally, So give us the chance to ask you personally.
We're asking.
And let me know. But I'd like to say your name. I'd love to say your name ask. Yeah. So call, email me personally or call us, 888-694-6931.
Or go online to kera.org. We really appreciate your contribution. You can choose a copy of Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk as your thank you gift. We really appreciate your contribution.